The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. Greetings and welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society. My name is Kyle Quincy Shireen von Cedric Parker. I am the first of that name, obviously. And I am incredibly glad to be here today.
Is that because you're here with Matthew B. Kelly?
I think that that might be the case, yes.
How are you, Quincy?
I am well. Having gone through this past week and come out the other side, I feel positive. I feel that there is forward and upward momentum, and that is, to me, a good and beautiful thing. I am looking forward to this this particular conversation and to sipping this particular tipple with you today. Once again, even though we are deeply committed to the Scotch universe, today we are sort of stepping a little outside of the strictness of the Scotch world.
Yes.
We're playing in the larger whiskey world.
Back to the bourbons.
Yeah.
Part six.
Yeah, this is... say part six. You're reminding me of the Heart Part Six, which was a rather lackluster reply by one Aubrey Drake, whatever his last name is, in part responsible for the best rap beef of the last year or two, Drake versus Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, I guess. Those could be interesting, but my mind tends to live in the past in terms of culture.
Mm-hmm.
So what immediately comes to mind is Leonard Part 6.
Of course. Bill Cosby. Yes, yes.
Which by his own admission, far before any of the controversy popped out to the general public... He said, no, that was bad. Don't go see it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting how, and I guess maybe it's something to get into after we do, you know, the thing. But it's interesting how even at a certain level of power and influence, it seems like there's always someone else who can pull a string. And even with all the creative license and whatever else a guy like Bill Cosby had, he could be made to star in something that he thought was trash.
Well, I don't know. If he took it after... thinking it was trash, or he thought it was trash after production wrapped. I don't know. But in any event, your point still stands. Mm. And I would venture to say it is in the nature of complexity that there's always someone else who could pull a string at the right place at the right time.
Do you think you reach the top of a pile and you realize that you've just reached... you know, the top of this particular plateau.
Yeah.
And now...
But it's also the beauty of it.
You have another mountain to climb. And even when you get to that other mountain and you get to the top of that, there's a mountain behind the mountain.
You could also choose a nice valley and relax yourself.
You could, but then you might end up like Sisyphus trying to roll a boulder to the top of that mountain every day for the rest of your life.
Well, I mean, this is exactly my point. You're not Sisyphus. You're not condemned to it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to roll the boulder.
How often do we not? Let me rephrase. How often do we do what we don't have to do?
Well, considering that this quote that I absolutely love. During one Shakespeare in Paradise, I was in the car being transported with one of the guests. She was a solo performer. She had a son with her. And just because of scheduling, she had to renege on a commitment that she had made to him. The son said, "But Mom, you have to. You said you would. So you have to." And she looked at him and said, "The only two things I have to do is breathe and die." I tried my best not to laugh so loud that it turned into a traumatic experience for the kid, but I've never heard it put more succinctly and beautifully. So anything besides those two things, pretty much
we don't have to do
all the time, yeah, is the answer to your question.
Yes. Yeah. The tipple of the day is a bourbon, but it is not as you think of bourbons, because when you think of bourbons, you think of Kentucky.
Sorry, it's not labeled as a straight Kentucky whiskey. This is something different.
This is a bourbon, mm-hmm, that is a blend of straight bourbon whiskeys.
Mm-hmm.
And this is created, mm-hmm, in Utah.
Ah, hence the mountains.
Hence the mountains on the label, yes. It's called High West, and this is just their High West straight bourbon. And I first ran into this when it was sitting on the desk of a colleague, and I thought that I had seen most of the good bourbons out there. How naive was I? And I popped the cork and had a sip and said to myself, "Oh, there's something here." That's been a while now, so I wanted to bring this to. Sorry,
I mean, well then let's. I'm anxious.
Ah, okay, well, good. Yeah,
let's do the thing.
I wanted to bring it to the square with you, to see if I could, you know, let you do. I'm gonna. Oh wait! Hallelujah. And now I will let the show progress as it usually does. Matthew, tell the people what your nose is saying to you.
Hmm. on the nose, those at first a little mellow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smooth but full butterscotch scent. Then on I gave it a little swirl. Got a little alcohol forward. But the legs on this thing is interesting. Now, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, that you're evolving a little bit on legs. Because in one of our early episodes, I remember you not attributing much to the legs of whiskey as one would to wine. But, correct me if I'm wrong,
It's oils.
Yeah.
It's oils from the barrels, mm-hmm. you know, so no, I don't think you're wrong at all. My initial impression of the High West, especially on the nose, was that there was this corn and vanilla sweetness that I was... but it dissipated really quickly in terms of the nose, you know?
Yeah, no, that was like, you mention it, definitely vanilla, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it got really, you could tell that this is a bourbon. Mm-hmm. The alcohol is right there. So I am expecting, I'm expecting a good spice. You know, whenever we do start to sip.
Yeah.
But you got fascinated by these legs.
And yeah, because
the viscosity of it.
I think that you know, I may be jumping ahead of my competency here, but I'm thinking that after I take my first sip, I'm gonna hit the water drop on that.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that may have, you know, due to the high oil content,
yeah,
it would definitely...
It'll open up.
Give it a different...
It'll open up a lot.
Yeah. A different taste because of the dispersion mm-hmm. of the oil. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm ready.
It will definitely open up. I am going to join you.
I'm going in.
In our first sip, yes. Go ahead. So I treat this a little like the Macallan, a really small sip just to coat the tongue, to get the tasters flowing, get the taste buds up there ready to roll, and now I'm gonna go back in for a real sip. Oh, wow. Okay. Matthew, I have thoughts.
Please.
Normally, you know, I would let you go first, but I have thoughts. I feel compelled to jump on this.
Listen, man, I am comfortable being a follower of someone who enjoys whiskey just ever so deeply, like yourself. So go right ahead.
Fine. Make fun of me. That's okay. I'm kidding. So the first thing I noticed was the maybe it's because of the small sip that I had, but the mouthfeel of this bourbon is incredibly smooth.
Mm.
And that's literally the first thing I noticed. It was like drinking... It was just so much smoother than I anticipated. The second thing I noticed is it is very alcohol forward.
So far, beat for beat, we're matching here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then the next thing I noticed after letting that first sip linger for a while is that as the burn is, you know, making its way down the chest as the good bourbon burn is supposed to do, still up on the tongue, I'm starting to get some of those corn flavors, some of that. I'm tasting not a sweet honey, but a honey kind of backdrop in there as well. The vanilla that I smelled on the nose maybe is going to show up a little more as it opens up.
But I'm not getting it.
But I don't get it right off the right off the taste.
So I would add my experience to that is the very nice burn really bloomed forward and on the lips. Sure, I got some in the throat, but on the lips, not an unpleasant burn. More of a subdued, almost a spice from the burning of the alcohol. But interestingly, I don't know if it was just that I took too much of a sip, but I actually got a bloom of the burn through my nose.
You may have taken too big a sip, yes.
But it was actually quite pleasant. No complaints. That is... Quincy.
Okay.
Always...
What?
The heavy hitters, man. Like, I just don't... Perhaps our bar that you have set is just so high that there's not going to be anything that I am so about. That from this point forward, I just need to learn how to discern the finer points between these higher end beverages.
I hear you. I think that you are not necessarily wrong, but also I would like to recontextualize what you have said, if I may, from a perspective of relativity, right? One of the things that I think is so exciting about the world of spirits that we are exploring is that there is such a variety, and they run the gamut from dirt cheap to unbelievably expensive. And it's not safe to assume that price point equals enjoyability. And
that's fine. I haven't inquired as to the price of any of these.
Yeah. And I want you to know the price has fluctuated wildly, right? Because I think the cheapest one that we've tried, I won't say which one it is, was just a bit over $20.
Yeah, I mean, you have commented.
Mm-hmm. And the most
I have not inquired.
The most expensive one is just shy of $500.
I saw a whiskey recently that was just shy of $800, that is. And it slips my mind, but it's definitely one that you pointed out before. And I smiled and went my way.
Yeah.
I also saw tequila just shy of $800 as well.
The aged tequilas, especially once they get up around 70, 80 years old, they get pretty expensive. The scotches that are in that range are, I mean, the level of nuance that you have to be able to perceive to really understand why a scotch costs $1,000.
Yeah, don't serve that to me. That's
why it costs $10,000.
That's pearls before swine.
But that's the thing, Matthew.
I'm not there yet.
It might be pearls before swine at this moment.
Yeah.
But the journey that you're on, before too much longer, you're going to be drinking $4,000 or $5,000 scotch and thinking to yourself, yeah, this is okay. I need to move up to the next level, you know?
Well, that assumes that the quality and price,
as I say,
are invariably linearly associated. So
I will tell you this. Let me see if I can.
Because on the wine side, you know, I've tasted a few expensive ones that have not made me want to pay more than $30-$40 for some of the my go-tos, which sometimes, thankfully, are on sale.
Yeah.
In the 20s.
So the Macallan 25 Sherry Oak is between like $5,000 and $6,000 for the bottle. I had a sip of the Macallan 25 Sherry Oak as part of a menu that's my friend Sebastian is doing a dinner at Karna, where Reed, who we've had on the show before, Reed Parker, is coming. Reed is the area representative for Macallan, and he's gonna sort of conduct an exclusive private dinner with 20 or so people at Karna's private dining room, and each course is going to be paired with an expression of the Macallan, and the 25-year-old is going to go with the dessert.
How many courses?
It's 4 courses. You know, so you start off.
Are you going to be able to taste dessert?
I mean, it's scotch, not wine. So you're not going to be drinking, you know, 15 to 20 ounces at a time, are you? No.
It's also a wildly different alcoholic content, the proof versus.
I mean, this is true, but nonetheless, I believe that everybody will be able to taste dessert.
Suffice it to say, I believe that you will all enjoy the night.
Oh, I can't afford to go. It's like almost.
Well, they will all enjoy the night.
They will certainly enjoy the night.
As you did at the tasting.
But let me tell you about this 25-year-old brother. I am a firm believer that the price is just what the market will bear. Right, yes. It's not a marker of intrinsic quality. It's marketing. If you tell the market this costs this much, and the market says, "All right, I'll pay that much for it," well, then that's what it costs.
Yeah.
However, the Macallan 25-year-old Sherry Oak was a revelation. It wasn't a revelation. It was a revelation to me. That is hands down. I had to sit down after I took a sip.
My man is calling an ancient name of gods, revelation.
I took a sip.
So blown away.
And the chef looked at me and he thought something was wrong. I told Sebastian, I said, excuse me a second. I literally had to sit down and just let it happen in my mouth. Because I was like, what is this? What is this? So, all of that is to say that the world that we're playing in and skipping through as we frolic through these fields where these grain fields with all these beautiful whiskeys, it's a broad and vast field, and we can spend a couple of bucks, or we can spend a couple of more bucks to pick up these sips. But in terms of the experience that you get, I think that's a better way of marking value than how much it cost. And I would put something like this. I mean, we'll come back to it at the end, whether or not, you know, after it's opened up a little bit, if you add a little water to it or whatever, you know, to talk about whether this goes on the list or not. But I start out predisposed towards awarding this a place on the list only because it's an interesting experience for me.
Agreed.
You know?
I have to say, one of the things that I really appreciate about these leggier whiskeys is, I would say, after the finish, I have this very nice coat on my mouth.
Oh, yeah.
That is continuing to deliver.
It's giving.
And it's just a very pleasant, smooth experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a little different. Actually, the vanillas are coming through for me right now. So
I was waiting for you to say it. I did not want to be accused of
prejudice.
Lead
me along, sir. Yeah.
But yeah, as soon as I took that my third sip, I definitely got the vanilla. I definitely picked up the honey. There's a bit of the very for me, and this might be because I associate the two flavors anyway. But I feel like I taste a bit of caramel as well.
You know. Well, sorry to cut you off.
It's all right, brother. Go ahead.
An idea has just bubbled up in my head that I've decided I'm going to share in just a little bit. But it's about these interests of ours and how I think one of the beautiful things about the internet is that these niche or very small interests of people get to be shared, you know, in a what certain capitalists would call a dematerialized, democratized, demonetized way. So we get to share our experience sipping, and I'm thinking of an interesting pairing for this down the road. Speaking of which, well, you look like you...
Bourbon goes well with... I mean, all whiskeys go well with red meat.
Oh, I'm not talking about a culinary pairing.
Oh.
Which would be great to have for this as well. But we'll get there. But I open up asking you about how are you? And you got through the week. How you doing on your New Year's resolutions?
My who's? My what?
Yes, it is June. It is the beginning of June, which I believe makes this a new quarter. Or is this the last month in the quarter?
This is the last month in the second quarter. Yeah.
So we're getting there. We didn't have an update on second quarter yet. Yeah. No details if you're not comfortable, but you know, how you doing on your resis there?
We had this conversation about whether or not we were going to have resolutions, because
a shorthand.
But
we understand each other here.
Yeah.
How are things coming along?
My search for my Speedo bikini body has foundered significantly. Okay. While
12 months to go.
Oh no, I was supposed to do it by the end of this summer.
This summer?
Yes.
Well, I had committed to next summer.
Well, that's you.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's you. I can't imagine despite the fact, and I call this the undisputed fact, that I am the sexiest man alive. I feel that it would be less than advantageous to take those photographs and create that calendar until my body has assumed proportions that I personally would sign off on. I see Davinia laughing as she is listening to me while she is working. And I just want Davinia to know, I saw her laugh, and she could pay for that at some point.
Yes, well.
The other thing that I had to do this year, I had some financial issues over the last 2 years I needed to sort out. And I made some progress in terms of getting some of those issues resolved. Not everything by far, but positive movement has taken place in most of those areas. The other thing was getting Maya through college. You know, she's done with her second year. Looking forward to being a junior, and that's an exciting thing for me to watch her blossom as a songwriter, as a singer, as a producer. One of her classes was she had to score a trailer. And so she did a score for the trailer for Dune, the second movie, and her score for the trailer was really incredible. It was so close to what I would have done that I was just flabbergasted that her instincts are so similar to mine, but also so sophisticated. And I'm like, you go, girl. This is the stuff. So, yeah, I am really excited about seeing where she takes her career as she is moving through. So I guess those are my resies, as you call them. And that's that's a bit of an update. I got some more weight to lose. I've lost some. I got some more bills to pay. I've paid some. Maya still has some distance to go in college, 2 more years. But we got through the first 2 years. So overall, I think, you know, I get a passing grade so far for the year.
Good stuff.
You know that you can't ask the question without being required to answer it yourself.
That's disputable, but I'll go ahead. In short, I lost some weight. I got some more to lose. made some progress in financial areas. So, you know, unfortunately, I can't give much details at the moment. Perhaps at the end of June. And there's a proper mid-year update.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not overly anxious or disappointed in any way. So happy with that to this point. It's time to put the foot on the accelerator.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I feel like we are maybe it's just the circle that I find myself in, but I feel like everybody is taking a deep breath, preparing for the plunge, whatever that is, right? Whatever it is they're about to throw themselves into wholeheartedly, or whatever it is they're about to work at with all their might, with all their whatever. It just feels like there's a collective, okay, let's go get this thing, whatever this thing might be,
mm-hmm.
that's happening in my circle anyway, as I said.
So, what is currently making you smile, besides whiskey?
I had turned off my cable while Maya was in college in Boston. She's home for the summer, so I turned the cable back on. And I have started binging Monk. And I want you to know, Matthew, Monk, okay, so Monk is top 3 TV of all time. the new Doctor Who series that started in 2007, I think, with Christopher Eccleston, is number one for me. So Doctor Who is number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a kind of a grouping there with Monk permanently and firmly rooted in that grouping, which runs either second or third. But yeah, those are so watching from the first episode of the first season mm-hmm. has been very enjoyable. Very enjoyable.
I have to say, as your friend, that this comes as somewhat of a relief to me. After it's an almost traumatic incident of me overhearing you sing the praises of Robert Jordan last week. So, you know, I feel much better now.
Please understand, I have never watched Game of Thrones. I have zero interest in Game of Thrones, the television event. My comments were purely directed towards the books, which
right,
I read.
Not Game of Thrones.
And enjoyed.
You mean the new Amazon series?
Oh, The Wheel of Time.
Wheel of Time.
Right. Yes. You said Robert Jordan.
For some reason,
I heard George Martin. I'm sorry.
No.
I read all of those books in the Wheel of Time series twice, some of them three times. Having watched the first season on Amazon Prime of The Wheel of Time, I was distressed until I decided to pretend that I had never read the books and just watch it and see if I could possibly enjoy it in that circumstance. And I will confess that I hate watched it as a thought experiment, and ended up actually enjoying it by the time the next season rolled around. I was actually in, I confess. I will not shy away from that bitter and painful truth. I'm a Rosamund Pike fan. I think she's a lousy Moiraine. But overall, yeah, Matthew.
I just want to let the society know, and the member listening in particular, that this is a series, if you've never heard of it, the books are recommended often by those who are asked whether or not one should go down this gargantuan, well, okay, this long road and this mm-hmm. with these gargantuan, I will describe them as obstacles of books. And I will back that up with my own anecdote in a moment. But the answer is comically, very often, yes, it gets good at book 7, but you should definitely read them all. But maybe not. What? What a ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
For books that run 800 plus pages on the small side.
Yeah. The problem is, I could understand why a person would say that. Having read the books, as I said, I read them all at least twice. I disagree violently on a personal level, as a personal recommendation of mine, I don't think you could skip any of those books. I think things that happen in the Eye of the World, Eye of the Storm.
Okay, so do happen.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, because I'll tell you my experience of The Wheel of Time. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which book it was. It was a slog of an experience. Because in over 1,000 pages, a lot happened for nothing to happen. How that's possible for over 1,000 pages, I have no idea. And I also lost the will to find out. So never read another one. So I'm happy. If anyone enjoyed them, great. I'm a supporter of anyone who will jump into fantasy, but not my cup of tea.
They require a certain confluence of interests to be, in my view, properly enjoyed. In addition to enjoying fantasy, you have to also enjoy history and politics. You also have to have some interest in Eastern philosophy. You have to have some sense of some interest in weapons.
I'm checking the boxes here.
And and then you also have to have an interest in romance. And I think that the way that he melds all of those things together is, and then he lays over all of that an allegory that is at times it's so close to the Christian allegory that it's hard to read it as not religious fiction. But you kind of have to be looking for that to see it. And once you see it and you look for it, it's impossible not to see. But for all of the storytelling that is obtuse and that goes in so many different directions at once, as a series of short stories strung together in a line as a way of telling how we get from one place to another, some of the stories are better than others. But overall, the quality, in my view, is very high.
I'm going to put it down to starting with the wrong book.
You know what? I actually did start with number 7. And then I enjoyed number 7, Crown of Swords. I enjoyed number 7 so much that I went back and started at the first one and then made my way through. My favorite of the books is actually number 4. Because it is the one that tells the story that I was most interested in, which is Rand and his Aiel heritage. So that's actually my favorite of the books. But yeah, no, I could understand you being upset about my enjoyment of the Amazon Prime series, The Wheel of Time. Yes.
I watched the series, season 1, and I was not as disappointed as I was with the book that I read in the series, which again I can't remember which one.
Take another stab at the
nose. I think it is time to dive back into the amber. Just.
Oh, yeah. It's almost like candy now.
You know, that's the first thing that comes to mind, but a sophisticated, like a grown-up candy.
Yeah.
But I just feel like I need to deepen the language around how I describe these things, because I just feel like I fall back to that candy so much.
Mm.
But a good bourbon is, that's what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as a writer, you feel compelled to be endlessly creative. And I understand, I recognize, I support that.
Yes, but I'm going to cut off or inject here by saying that there's also the engineering side of my mind that really likes precision, which results in a particular type of writing and language, which is not for everybody. But I want to be able to make the distinctions that I feel.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to be able to express them in a way that that lands consistently.
So what I was about to say is the reality is, in my view, that candy is candy. Right?
I mean, fair enough.
If bourbon tastes like candy, then the bourbon tastes like candy.
Yeah, man.
You know, and you could...
There's a synonym now.
Yeah, you could have... you can object to that reality as much as you want, but if that's what it is, then that's what it is. I definitely get the corn and the honey and the vanilla. The alcohol is still there, but what surprised me and what made me want to go back in is the cinnamon that I got on the nose.
Ah, you got there before me. Yes.
I didn't realize it was a race.
Sometimes it is. Oh. But I also get...
keeping score?
A woody... No.
Oh.
No. Yeah. There's a woodiness as well that I'm getting on a lot of these recently. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's just...
I mean, the oak barrel thing is...
My own palate or...
No, I don't think it's your own palate. It's the presence of the woodiness is part of the style. Right? The brewmasters... will definitely go. They'll lean in the direction of making sure that the liquid does have some flavoring from the barrel, because otherwise they might as well just age it in steel, right? They might as well age it in glass. They might as well. There are you can age these things anywhere practically. But they age them in oak or whatever other wood they age.
And speaking of the Macallan and other high-end scotches and the wonderful elements that go into making that amazing liquid, we'd like to bring back from one of our earliest shows some comments from Reed Parker, who's the Macallan representative in our region. And he had some very interesting things to say about the culture surrounding scotch and the Macallan scotch in particular. And we thought it would be fun to hear a little bit of that commentary right now. So we're bringing that back. Here's a bit of a flashback from one of the earliest episodes of the Sunday Scotch Society featuring Reed Parker from Macallan.
Scotch has such a defined culture around it, and I guess I want to ask
And Matthew, I'm sure you have your own questions, but my first one, my first proper question for the show is, where does this culture of Scotch come from in your experience, in your view?
Well, you know, it goes back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. I mean, the term aquavita is essentially based around Scotch. It has gone through tyrannic kings. You know, you look at the names with Glen in it, and most people don't know that they had the word Glen in it because they were actually producing glens and covered. So they were actually able to hide their distilleries from tyrannic kings. Scotland's gone through numerous wars, numerous hardships. And I truly believe that if it wasn't for the desire to create good products, Scotch would have been, it wouldn't be here today. And it's a series of hard decisions, and I think they made the right decision every time. During Prohibition, everybody was affected. Scotland, extremely, extremely affected. Macallan especially. I mean, us back in the day, like before, I'd say around like the 1870s, 80s, we were based on blended. You know, we would give our products to the distilleries around us. And it wasn't until about 1826, when times were really tough, that a beautiful person decided to keep some family barrels. And we decided to start aging them and having private stock. And then you look at, you know, what that's done for us now. It's pretty amazing. I mean, I think that the Scotch society is very close knit. We all kind of have each other's backs. It's an amazing story. I mean, the first documented Scotch was back in 1494. That's pretty unbelievable, honestly.
1494. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's old. That's old. Yeah.
I know.
So then, and I guess this goes back to my original question is for the drinker, especially someone who's a neophyte, who's just trying to get into it. How do you tell the difference, and what, and how do you tell whether the differences mean anything to you?
I think that all comes down to personal preference. You know, when it comes to Scotch, there's so many different avenues. You can do smoky, you can do peaty, you can do sherry casked. They're trying so many different casks right now. And all of it is super unique and super beautiful. So it's really what's, I guess, catching your heart. When it comes to, I guess, picking up certain notes and differences from distillery to distillery, that comes with time. The one thing that I did, actually, I used to work at this amazing cocktail lounge called Veneto in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. And there was four of us that reopened it, rebranded. None of the same staff stayed. And we went in there and we did an amazing job. We actually ended up winning Cocktail Bar of the Year from Yam Magazine in our first year. I was the new guy there. And I don't mean that as in when I started, but new to their level of expertise. And I remember having a dram with one of my colleagues, Ryan Simpson, one of my best friends now. I can't say enough about him. And I see him writing in this book. And I look at him and I'm like, what are you writing down? And it's his, you could call it like his whiskey Bible or his flavor Bible. And essentially every whiskey that he tries, he's writing down notes, what he's getting, if he liked it. And it goes down to the nose, the palate, the appearance. And he would flip through his notes and he would compare the whiskeys. You know, if he feels like he's picking up a certain note, he would actually flip through his book and he was able to relate what he was tasting to a certain whiskey, whether it's in the same region or not, it was documented. So that was what I started to do. And every day I would pick a bottle off the back bar. I would learn about it. And then when I didn't have enough bottles on the back bar, I would pick one on the internet and I would learn about it until I had essentially an understanding of what the casks mean, the regions, the different types of oak. And I ended up, I guess, having such an appreciation for the craftsmanship and the characters that come with each scotch from each region. So I guess the advice that I would give is try whiskey from different regions, start there, and document everything. Go through your documents, you know, pinpoint what these notes mean to you, and you can find your ideal whiskey eventually. And that is definitely my advice to anybody that wants to actually get into whiskey and have, I guess, more of an understanding to it.
And that is going to do it for us this week, this episode of the Sunday Scotch Society with me, K. Quincy Parker, and my partner in crime, one Matthew B. Kelly. This week, we enjoyed the High West bourbon out of Utah, and it is a definite keeper. As you heard Matthew say, it is definitely something to put on the list out of Park City, Utah, up in the mountains there. And I really enjoy it, so I highly recommend that you go find you a bottle and see if you can get some of those flavors that we talked about in the nose, and get some of that on your palate as well. It's a great drink. In any event, thank you so much for joining us. The list is getting populated, folks. So we'll see you on the next episode. The pod drops again next Sunday at 5, so we'll see you then. Das darovia.